You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back once again to the good, the bad, and the rugby. I hope you're keeping well on what is, as we record this, a momentous day because I was going to say, ladies and gents, boys and girls, but just ladies and gents, the public houses of this country are open once again. A timely boost for the economy and for those of us who enjoy a little bit more face to face than Zoom to Zoom. And to celebrate this week, it is a very warm welcome back to Tins, to Ellis. And to Ben, is this the first time we've had a little quad amongst the four of us? I don't think we've done a four-ball yet, have
we? This is the first foursome we've had, yeah.
This is the first foursome we've had. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm hoping for peace, calm, tranquility, and just a very nice get-together. Ellis, I'm going to come to you first of all. I can't imagine an all-dayer is high on the priority list right now, but right time, right place. Have you and fellow teammates, fellow friends got something in the diary?
Not quite. As you know, everyone always sort of says concentrate on the task ahead first. So weekend being the priority, but I'm sure we'll have some sort of get-together after. So nothing pending right yet.
You will deserve it, depending on what happens at the weekend. Obviously, we're going to get into that in a moment or two. But Ben, a little Dubonnet on the rocks, a little carafe of Vin Rouge ready and waiting near you somewhere.
Carafe of Vin Rouge, mate. I always do in-house, to be honest. It's like, I mean, the lockdowns have been pretty intense in terms of home chucking down some red wine down my throat. I'm not going to lie, but I adore that stuff. And so I don't need a restaurant. I don't need a pub. I don't need to go outside. I just stay in-house and I love it. But I'm sure we'll speak about it in a second. But what absolutely delights me about this week is just seeing fans coming back to the stadium. That's just going to be an absolute game changer. Otherwise, it's been pretty soulless. I can't imagine what it was like to play, but even to watch, it was a bit heartbreaking. So can't wait for this weekend.
Oh, man. It's a stupid question to ask you, but as the Oliver Reed of Planet Rugby, just a double thumbs up?
Double thumbs up. And I will look forward, actually, to getting down to the Crown in Minchinhampton and having a beer inside there again.
A pint of mead. We've lots of ideas bouncing around this week. And actually, one of the things that sort of cropped up, which I think is very interesting, is to talk about the Tigers. It's obviously a big weekend, given that you've got a European Cup final and the Challenge Cup to look forward to. And we've sort of been mumbling and rumbling about the fact over the last few months that, A, it's great to see the Tigers beginning to get back to where I think most people would expect them to. But it is one of the unwritten rules of English rugby that the game in this country and the England team needs a strong Tigers outfit. And therefore, given we've got Ellis, who's a current, and given we've got Ben, who's a past, and given we've got Mike, who was a worthy opponent, I would love to spend just a little bit of time finding out not only how things are at the Tigers right now, but also why it was like it was over the last few seasons, how it's getting back to where I think all of us would love to see it, and obviously building up to what's going to be a great occasion on Friday night in the Challenge Cup final. Just before we get into that, a quick nod of the cap for what has been a remarkable week for Leicester, given what happened in the FA Cup. A first FA Cup title in their history. Did you watch, Ellis? Are you into it in that way, or are you too passionate for Bristol?
Bristol Rovers ain't doing much for me at the moment. But as a part of the city, when I came in 2016, I think that was when they won the league, which nobody's seen cup. Well, a few people did because they had some big bets on it. But City went into lockdown. You couldn't walk up the streets. And it wasn't quite the same as us winning the LV title in 2017. But almost the same. They love it. They love their sport. They've got obviously some great sportsmen come out of Leicester. In Selby, the snooker player, who obviously does very well for himself. And then the football team's doing great, and hopefully the rugby can come on the up as well. But yeah, the town has a great vibe back when the football's doing well. Not so much the rugby at the moment.
Well, but coming along in terms of the rugby, do you see any of them out and about in Vardy, you know, in his wagon
having
at the wheel at the lights or not?
Not quite. I see some of the younger boys. I guess they live a bit more central. I'd say the I don't know, the stars of the team wouldn't really, they'd get swarmed, wouldn't they, in the local Asda, and OB, so they probably steer clear of that. Ben's got some fond memories there. So, yeah, no, I don't really see Jamie Vardy knocking about, to be honest. I live quite out in the sticks myself, so no one around here.
Okay. Was it a big thing when you were there, Ben? Did you come across them on nights out and, I don't know, down at the golf club?
No, to be honest, all I knew is that Leicester and Coventry hate each other, don't they? Because there was basically Andy Good, who was a massive Coventry football fan, yeah. And there was a physio who was an absolute fanatic from Leicester. So they were just going at each other, singing songs about some sort of elephant coming to town and shitting on everyone. There's a song about it. I remember that one. That's about it.
Oh, another one.
So it was just the banter and the rivalry that we all love within it. And the only memories that we've got is just that we knew it was a special thing to go play in their stadium. And so then yeah. I remember the semi-final with Julien Dupuis scoring at 82nd minute, dummying the pass against Bath and going. So those memories were good. And that's about it. But other than that, not much.
Not much. Okay. Well done, Leicester City. Anyway, a hell of a goal to win it and a hell of a story once again. Before we get into the sort of the meat of it, El Fuego at the moment, Ellis. I mean, just rampant. How much are you enjoying your ruggers at this point in time?
Yeah, I'm just enjoying winning, to be honest. Obviously, we fell short against Sale. And then within the 2 weeks before as well against Bath and Northampton, I thought we let ourselves down. But I'd say in the past when we lost, I genuinely thought we should have lost. And then some of the games that we're losing now, we're like, well, we should have won. So why haven't we? Which doesn't leave that much of a bitter taste in your mouth. Two sides to the sword, I guess. But no, I'm enjoying it. Just nice to be back with the boys. I don't think the bubble was great for me personally. So like being at home with the family and stuff before games is a big help for me.
That's good. Great to hear. And it obviously is paying dividends in the way you're playing. But for you personally, is that, you know, you mentioned being home again and back with the Bab, etc. Is that why the form has come back? Or have you tweaked something? Or has someone given you a bit of inspiration elsewhere?
I actually weirdly looked at this because my dad, being the harshest critic I've got, why the fuck haven't you been playing like this all the time then? And simply put, I think I'm getting a bit more treatment on my back and stuff. I've got a relatively stiff back, so I'm getting a bit more treatment, a bit more physio. Maybe that could be it. Who knows?
I watched something on your Instagram today. Looked like you're having your legs wrapped around your head. Is that part of the kind of the routine?
The spatchcock chicken. That's not for rugby.
Sorry. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure what it was. I was maybe watching.
Yeah, no, that's part of the regime now. Like I said, I'm just getting a lot more hands-on treatment, which is probably something that I've neglected in the past. Going into the physio room's not always been my favourite thing to do, so I've neglected it and now I'm embracing it.
Good, it's working. And the wonderful thing is the meat pies. I mean, we haven't yet had a chip pirouette and a sort of 50-metre gallop, but what you're doing is working very well in and around the red zone. Do you quite enjoy a try? Does that make you feel better, or is it just part and parcel of the day job?
I remember when you were younger and you scored a try and you'd think you were mint and the big celebrations and gave it all to the parents on the sideline and that. But I don't know, when I score it now, especially with no fans, it's just literally you dot it down, you're about to erupt, and then you think, fuck it, no one's here. Do you know what I mean? So there's no one else to cheer with. The boys are like, just get back to the halfway line and get the next kickoff. So at the moment, yeah, I enjoy scoring for the team, but I've got nothing no one to cheer with.
Very is good to show you.
Is it now with hugs being back, are you allowed hugging again?
So
are you
allowed
to
word.
Jump on each other?
Cautious hugs.
What's a cautious hug look like, Alex?
I've no idea. You take me back to my school days, but keep going. Go on, Alice. You were going to say your celebrations.
No, yeah, I just thought, when you remember when they said about, oh, you know, I had to high five and stuff. And I remember we scored like it might have been a pushover scrum penalty try or maybe a pushover more. And we'd literally been within inches of each other's faces. And then we weren't allowed to celebrate with each other. I just found it, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, doing your bit for the country. Mm. Is that a thing though, Tins? When you galloped over for England or Gloucester or Bath, wherever it was, can you enjoy the personal satisfaction of a try? Or is it now just what Ellis is saying, it's just a team thing and therefore you move on?
Kids love
tries.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's depends on the try. It always depended on the try for me. Like, you think about the first game I played against Ireland, where Benny Cohen scored that try where we went the whole length from the restart. Oh, yeah.
Could have been yours.
It could have been my try.
Could have been yours.
Dennis Hickey, he ran the 100 metres for Ireland schoolboys. I just like to let him know when he reeled me in. So he was fast. I obviously got one in that corner as well in the end. And I think then you celebrate. But if it's been a great team try and you just finish it, first people I go and high five is the person who's created it, which is someone not generally more talented than me on the inside. So I think it's all about, for me, it was the emotion of the part of the game it was, how important was it. I think that, whereas if you're running away with it and you score, it's like just jumping
in
back
the nicest way
it.
Possible. Tinder saying basically my tries were 2 meters out and they were shit. There's nothing to celebrate.
But
sometimes because those ones are all physicality, then sometimes you're pumped off the back of it. Whereas if someone lobs a must ball over to me and I get to stroll over the line, it's not. Yeah. It's hard for me to go mental about it.
What was the best worldie you ever scored?
That I scored.
Yeah.
Well, I did the best try I scored. Could have been the one at Ulster for Gloucester, where again from the restart we went wide. Bolsh skinned that guy on the outside, gave it to Sinbad. Sinbad sort of beat that guy, offloaded it back inside. But then I had a 50 meter. It was a 50 meter running, getting chased down by Paddy, whatever he's called.
Wallace. Paddy Wallace.
Yeah. Oh, I'd fancy taking in a foot race. Fortunately, I did. so that was a good one. But again. I'm like Ellis, I've got no chip over the tops regathers in my locker either.
You scored some bloody good ones though.
What Dublin, do you mean either? I've
Melbourne.
Got that in the locker.
Yeah, call it similarity.
Some of my best ones were back in the days when the old 9-12 worked off the back of a line-out. I just went through the seam between the 10 and then all I had to do was beat the fullback. I did one against Italy and a couple of others for Bath, but that was my market. That was
good. Ben, any contributions for worldie tries?
Well, let's face it. When you play hooker, 90% of your tries come out of a driving maul. That's when it sort of defines you as a bloke. When you see the line, do you let it go for the guy who's behind you? You just hug it and keep it, you know? Those inner battles that Ellis knows, there's always that cheeky guy. So when you're young, there was no chance in the world that anybody was going to... I was going to tell anybody to let, you know, that I wasn't going to give it. And towards the end, mate, I could have been the first one on the line. I was like, nah, you're not touching it. But no, it was either that. And if it was more than a 10-meter run, I was out of breath anyhow. I wasn't ready to celebrate. So there was nothing out of it. For the little anecdotes, my first ever start for Stade, I scored 3. And I thought, I'm going to be the most, prolific hooker in the world. And in that season, that's all I scored. The next season, I think that's all I scored. I signed for Clermont because I saw Mario Ledesma. Remember the Argentinian guy? He was scoring some left, right, and center. First, because they had those pod systems, you know, where the 2 and the 6 would stay wide and whatever, like big old wingers. First training that I rock up, Vern Cotter's like, right, we're going to change the system. I want the hooker in the middle. You take all the snowballs. And I was like, bloody hell, I got stuffed again. But no, so I didn't score much.
Well, worst thing for hookers now is that even the backs get involved in 5 metre driving mauls now at the back. They're trying to nick the ball. It's like, sod off, will you? We do all the work. Let us at least enjoy the tries.
Is it a thing, though? Why do some players absolutely hoover up tries and others never, ever, 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 ever score? So Owen Franks played 100 times for the All Blacks and never scored. And yet Alex Donbrandt and Sam Simmons are just... I know they're different positions, etc. But there are some players like who Cole always find themselves over the try line and some who will never, ever, ever find... Like Ellis, 4-2. Dan Cole, 4-190. If that.
Maybe like Ben said, the Vern Cotter changing the system up would have stopped him from obviously scoring his hat-trick.
That's the only reason, mate. That's the only reason.
Like if you look at Chiefs, you said about Simmons and those boys and Domas scoring tries. So obviously Domas runs off Marcus all the time in the midfield and obviously makes a lot of line breaks, get a lot of second touches. Don't get me wrong, I think he's a great player and he deserves the tries, but they're potentially manifested from the game plan they've got. And then you look at Exeter, like Johnny Hill, good friend of mine, and he wouldn't mind me saying it, he's probably not going to score that many tries in another team, but they use him on the edge within the 22, so he gets a lot of opportunities one-on-ones quite close to the line, so he scores a lot of tries there. And I think with Sam, he scored some proper world beaters, hasn't he? So no comment there.
No comment.
He's just explosive, isn't he?
He's just very good at scoring tries, yeah.
I think what it is a lot of it will be how it's set up for you to play. But then, you know, you also have, and no offense to Coley, you have people who are there to bend over and push, and then you have people who are there to use their footwork and break it down. So you look at Ellis and Coley; their roles are slightly too different. So, that's how fitting into the team works.
Does Dan ever pipe up in a team meeting and say, look, guys, it's been 7 years since I last scored. I quite fancy a little something. I've come up with an idea. does anyone ever put himself forward, or is he literally told, shut up, bend, push? That's all you're here to do.
I'll hit the rocks. Right. I promise you. Yeah. Coley's very self-aware in terms of, he's like, Genji, you do the carries, I'll clean your rocks. And that's the thing, like, in the teams, obviously, everyone, like Ben said, it's the people at the front of the mall's probably pushing harder, and the bloke at the back gets all the credibility. But the person who cleans the first breakdown, or, do you know what I mean, does like a good dummy line, that's the people who make the tries. And it's just someone who's lucky enough to be on the end of the ball.
Wasn't there Wise a thing words. One season when Julian White was asked to come out of retirement? He said, I will come out of retirement and I will play, but I don't want to touch the ball in a game. I'm literally doing scrums and rucks and that's it. Am I making that up or not?
Yeah, he's an absolute
legend.
Yeah, he said. Someone said, "What's a good game for you, Julian?" He goes, "When I hit 30 rucks, I don't touch the ball." it's a good game for me.
You want a good anecdote of Julian White? Do you want one?
Yeah,
and it's delightful. Mm-hmm. We played against Sale, and he's in front of Andrew Sheridan. A fight kicks off after a scrum, and he's there absolutely belting him. You know, Whitey, there's on and off switch. Yeah. That's about it. There's nothing in between. And he's going at it. Hey, hey, hey. And he's drilling him, right? He gets a red card, gets sent off. I'm on the bench. He's sitting next to me. And he just looks at me, and he obviously swears with a big F word, you know. Wah! And I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, oh, you know, thinking he's disappointed because he did let the team down. I don't think I connected. And that's the only thing that troubled him in that day. There is like 1,000 anecdotes of this bloke who would kiss the ball on the Monday, see you next week, who did not own a pair of Moldies. He did not own a pair of Moldies. He had trainers and 21 studs. That's it. Yeah. This guy's an absolute legend.
What was he like to play alongside Julian White? I mean, you know, Ben, you had a little bit of French flair about you, and you enjoyed getting around the park. I mean, did you just kind of have to let him get on with what it was that he was there to do? Or did you ever try and upskill him, or did you ever ask more of him? Or,
well, I didn't try anything. I was just happy to be next to an absolute scrummaging machine. It one-on-one, purely back strength, I've never seen anything like it. Yeah. Like his actual leg strength was pretty average. He had tiny little pegs for a massive dude, but a freak of nature, of natural back strength. You know, that farmer strength, whatever you want to call it. It was just incredible. And when I was there, so I was in Leicester 2007, 2009, and he was just part of the absolute stone of the culture. So I rocked up with my white boots, and he spent an hour taking my boots, and I was thinking, oh, yeah, he's being nice. I don't know. He's changing my studs. I don't know what he did. No, he painted them in black for the whole video session. That's what he was doing. So he was there, you know, to guarantee the standards of culture and values were set straight. He would actually call up, you know, there's some big names when I was there, Lewis Moody, Ben Kay, Martin Corey, it was all that generation, Harry Ellis. And he was the one that would always call anybody out, whether you're young, old, you know, experienced, not experienced. He treated everybody the same. So he never said anything, but when he did, he would call out absolutely anyone. And that's what he did so well. So it was just a matter of let him do his thing, right? There was Martin Castrovani, who was the dynamic overall international prop, and Whitey was just there to drill people in half in the scrum, and that's what he did week in, week out.
And from an England perspective, Tins?
I mean, it scared me when he was on my own team. If you dropped, like, if you passed him the ball and it bounced off his chest, he looked at you like it was your fault. I was like,
I've got a vision.
Through your hands, Julian.
I've got a vision of him doing exactly that and throwing, I don't know who it was who gave him the pass, but throwing the most filthy look at whoever it was that had passed to him, because it just wasn't part of what he was there to do.
You understand you're not supposed to pass me the ball, because this is what happens, and it's your fault. So yeah, and if he's in the wrong position, we talk about now, obviously the game has changed and players want to be more involved. You have your Ellis, who wants to run line, so he wants to know more. Julian, he's like, someone like Brian Ashton's going, right, just play. What you see in front of you, Julian. He's like, I see people. people that I want to hurt. And he's just like, okay, you stay near the rock. Anyone else want to roll line? But as you said, in terms of just brutal honesty, but then brutal, that farmer strength, you would always want on your side, because of any sort of dust up, he'd sort of give you the pat, don't you worry about it. The next thing I know, the guy would be limping off or something. And he's just got Julian in the background. Not a player I don't think could possibly make it in today's game, but on the generation of going up and keeping people about, I think what we'll get onto about Leicester and what Leicester is, and some of the things that have possibly changed since, he was that driver of, you know, that generation that drove those standards that you expect. You know, why does Leicester have so many fights in training? Well, it's because that's what we do.
Right. Okay. That's what works.
Yeah.
Is the Ellis, is the ABC club, is it, I mean, it's obviously, you know, part of folklore, part of the fabric of Leicester. Is it still a thing? I mean, do you see old members in the clubhouse afterwards? Obviously not recently for a pint, but, you know, is it an integration thing and, you know, it gets passed on, or once they're done, are they out?
No, I think the front row at Leicester, sort of like Coley and Stanko, very good friends, and they're very good friends with Whitey, and I think they've got a sort of tight-knit bond. I've probably not been welcomed into that as soon as I would have liked, just because I'm a lot younger than those boys, and it's understandable. We've got different interests, scrums being the only commonality.
Not sure peroxide hair works. The
exactly. I don't know,
Coley's
blonde. I've been met Whitey at his farm. He cooks us barbecue. He's a lovely bloke, and I feel like he's sort of he's a lot nicer to the front row, I can imagine, than what he is to the sort of other positions in the team. But in terms of like the ABC, we've got the bar at Welford Road. I don't know if you've ever been there, and it's called the ABC Bar. But like, we don't really go down there much. It's just full of a lot of fans, to be honest. And then the nice touch is like on our kit. Obviously, on the bat now, we've got 1, 2, 3 and stuff. But on the kit, you've actually got A, B, C on the bottom, which it's subtle, but I like it. It's a real nice touch. So I like being a part of that sort of, like you said, folklore.
Do you buy into that history? I mean, are you someone that's interested in what Leicester did in years before you were born, and certainly when you were growing up, etc.? Or are you just writing your own chapter because it's about the here and now?
Half and half. Like, when I go to the stadium and I see like Martin Johnson's boots and all that sort of stuff, there's so much memorabilia, like Rantree's tops and all that. I can't imagine they're going to ask me for any tops and stuff when I leave, but for those to have all those like great players up on the wall and that, it's nice to see that the stadium's got some history, because I don't think I'd be able to buy into something that was just, it's got nothing about them. You know, they've got something they stand for and they sort of hang their hat on. I'd say we probably came away from that in the past sort of few years, and Steve's real big about buying into the history of the club and taking us back to what we were. But in the modern game, if you know what I mean, which is hard to do because, like you said, Tins, it's moved on so much. So you can't really have your whiteys and people banging people out in games. It don't work like that anymore. So we're trying to find that sort of modern twist on what the ABC club and the old Leicester Tigers is built on. And I think the history, it comes part and parcel with that.
It's funny. I remember I can't remember how many seasons ago, whether it was 2 seasons, Gloucester and Leicester playing at the start of it. And it, you know, suddenly when I went to Leicester, it was all about who was in the pack. They had good players in the backs, but you knew you were in for a rough old ride of it. And I think 2 years ago, suddenly they had that unbelievable all-star lineup in the back line. And then actually, you're looking down the team sheets of the forwards, you're like, well, don't really know him. And then it looked like they were trying to play all this open style rugby, and then Gloucester, who were more known for playing 3-pod systems with Dean Ryan and movement game, Sinbad, or we were then trying to drive line out. And it was like, it's like two teams that have sort of forgotten where their identity is and what they were trying to be. And I think what you see now with Leicester and that physicality that Genji brings, and how they're scoring tries from those 5 metres out, they're scoring a lot of, I think, quite a few line out drives from what I've seen as well. Stuff that you associate with going to Leicester and going to play on that, people always say, a smaller pitch, hostile crowd, it leads itself to being that physical standoff. And now you can't do the punch up, you can't do the backy off the back of a line out to Mudos or whoever he whacked off the back. but you can still be physical, and I think that's what they're starting to get back, is that physical bite that is part of what Leicester is.
Okay. I want to frame the next bit just around the fact, obviously, Leicester are back into the Challenge Cup final, and obviously proud history in the Heineken Champions Cup final as well. And we did mention, you might have seen this already, dear listener, dear viewer, that we're going to be doing something quite fun at the Heineken Champions Cup final this coming Saturday. We mentioned, of course, that the pubs are back open again. That means fans are also allowed back into stadiums. It's been a long time coming, but my word, it's good to have them back. We should also point out this is actually number one of two Good, Bad and Rugbys for you this week as well, because we have got a Heineken Champions Cup final preview show for you later this week. That's going to be dropping on your feeds on Thursday, if, of course, we get our act together. No guarantees. but we've got Nick Abendanen, who's going to be joining Tins and Ben for that one, which should be a lot of fun, talking all things French rugby. La Rochelle against Toulouse at Twickenham, Saturday, May the 22nd, the day after Ellis wins the Challenge Cup. With the Tigers, and everybody, of course, I think, just want to see Leicester lifting trophies again. Perhaps not in Northampton, but I think certainly we touched on it already. Strong Leicester is only good for the English game. But for the Heineken Champions Cup final, we are giving away 25 pairs of tickets, thanks to Heineken, who are celebrating a 25-year partnership with European Rugby, one of the longest in sport, I think. And that's not all. One of the lucky winners will get to bring a friend and to come and watch the game alongside the whole of the Good, the Bad and the Rugby team, and Maggie and Ben, if we can prize him away from BT Sport, and enjoy a beer or three. So do get involved with that. Have a look at our socials. It's also going to be the first time, would you believe, that the Good, Bad and Rugby team have all been together. And not sat behind a computer screen. So that is something that we're looking forward to. We'll talk about the highlights of the season as well a bit later on. We'll talk about who we think is going to be man of the match at the final, and we'll share a beer or two, as we said, courtesy of Heineken. So do get involved in that. All you have to do is head to Good, Bad and Rugby Instagram page, follow the link in the bio, fill in your details and start thinking about who you're going to bring if you win. I just want to get back into Leicester then. So a question for both of you, Ellis and Ben. Ellis, you were obviously in at Briz, and I know that you were sort of, you know, getting stuck in there. Why did you both join Leicester as the club that you sort of decided to go with? And I'm sure there were lots of open opportunities. Ellis, why the Tigers?
My hand was forced a little bit, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just with what was going on with myself off the pitch. So I got in trouble a little bit, as we probably spoke about a lot previously. And I had a clause in my contract, which I know a lot of people are going to find hard to believe. But basically, if I didn't get arrested or in a fight at training, I had a £500 bonus in my contract. That's hand on heart. I've probably still got the papers somewhere. And I think it was a 3-strike policy. So I basically had a month, a real bad month for me. I think it was December maybe, where I, all three, boom, done. So in November... Sorry, not November, in January, my agent started basically speaking to Robbo, saying, look, this probably ain't the place for him at the moment, just because I was just fucking about. It was all on me. Some of the boys in training didn't help. Used to sort of rattle the cage a little bit on purpose just to see if I'd how bad I wanted that £500 bonus.
That is unbelievable. Have you ever heard of anyone else who's got that clause in their contract?
No. I've never heard that.
No. But,
okay.
Yeah, so I think it was January, my agent started talking to a few other clubs. He agreed with Robbo was brilliant, and Chris Boy at the club at the time as well, basically just because of what was going on off the pitch, were kind enough to let me go somewhere else where we thought I'd be able to develop better as a rugby player, because I was making absolutely no progress at Bristol on a personal note, but the team was trying to do great things, and I felt like I'd probably be a hindrance as opposed to a... helping that. So my agent started chatting to a few clubs. I think it was Worcester, Northampton, Leicester, and one other, I can't remember who. And then Leicester made an offer straight away. I think Richard Blaze at the time had seen a bit of me, Jed Glynn and Richard Cockerell, and offered me a gig. And I didn't know too much about the Prem, because obviously I was only 2.5 years into my career, and I wasn't huge on rugby prior to that in terms of watching it and stuff. So I looked into it. I heard all the rumours, and I wanted a piece of the cake. So off I went, February the 1st, I think, up to Oadby. Got in Chestnut Avenue, as I'm sure Ben's heard of that. What a gracious gaff that was. And, yeah, there it was on my travels, about 2-minute walk from training, and the rest is history.
Did Leicester put a clause in your contract that if you don't get involved in three fights a week, you get fined £500?
Not quite.
And was that genuinely part of the appeal for going? Is the fact that
there was
a different element?
Holy, that was literally more so off the field than the fighting at the club, but that was definitely a determining factor of why they were happy to let me go.
So that is a very interesting way to find yourself to Leicester Tigers. Ben, from your side, glamorous Paris, wasn't it?
Completely different story. But 2007, so I'm 22. Stade Français, just going up through the ranks, my home club, born and raised in Paris. How can I say that? It's for me, moving south of, it's like going outside the M25. I had you know, spots on my forehead already. It was just too complicated for me. I was a proper Paris boy. I didn't see myself going anywhere else. I always felt very different in all the age groups. You know, they were very, like a very proud sort of regional area. Whereas in Paris, nobody gives a shit about rugby, especially at that time. And I enjoyed that. Rugby was just my fun, but then it wasn't my life. And gradually going up the first team of Stade Français, I was in competition with Dimitri Zarzewski, who was in competition with me in the under-21s, in the equivalent of the Saxons, and then in for the French team and for Stade Français. So I just thought, listen, it was a bit much. And I was about to resign. I was sitting next to Augustin Pichot, you know, the former number nine for and captain of the Pumas, who was acting as an agent, trying to get Juan Hernandez at Leicester. And we're literally sitting next to each other. He's like, what are you doing? I don't know. I'm thinking maybe I'll stay in Paris. I'm not so sure. You sure? Hang on. What about Leicester? I was like, what about Leicester? I don't know. Let me see. He just gets his phone out and he types, what about Ben Kayser? ? And you know how you see Simon Cohen at the time was the director of rugby.
Yeah.
And he's sort of head of operations. And you see the, you know, the three dot, dot, dot sort of typing. And it just says, Australia will answer. Very interesting. Let's talk. And the week after, I got a call from Richard Cockerill, who did his homework and knew me pretty well. And then we had to stop chatting because we played a quarterfinal of Champions Cup 2 or 3 weeks later in Leicester. And I started that game. It was a monster of a game. So good. You know that game where Juan Hernandez belts Alessandro Tuilagi 5 meters away from the line? Remember that one?
Yes, I remember that.
That's the game. I think we just lost by a couple of points. Like, amazing game. The sun was out. I got properly fooled by that one. But Welford Road as a stadium is an absolute stunner. Like, it's the first time I went. I went through, you know, the guys who were standing in the crowd. I felt like a gladiator. Yeah. Their team in 2007, there were monsters everywhere. And it was really like, I felt like I was in Old Trafford. You know, I was really, it was the Man United of rugby at the time. And I fell in love with the place. And Castro, who's a good friend, was Sergio Parisse, who was a good friend of mine, then took my number. And every day he was texting me, come on, you need to come, you need to come, you need to come. And then in the end, I signed. But I really felt like I was getting drafted to the NBA. It was really that type of difference of professionalism, setup. I mean, you can't even understand what the setup was at Stade at the time. There was quite a lot of cash, don't get me wrong. There was a proper team. But we used to, you know, we would like share a gym with some local ladies in one ground. And we would, you know, train in another field. I had a little Vespa scooter going everywhere. And it's just a really different life. And then you get to Leicester. There's like a protein shake every morning. You know, there's like a hydration test that I broke. Me and Julien Dupuis have got the record, by the way.
How do you break a hydrate?
You drink about seven coffees between midnight and 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you rock up and your piss is dry like dirt, basically. And
treacle.
They actually came to see him.
Slice off.
He's like, mate, treacle. You guys are gonna collapse at some point. I was like, nah, we'll be fine, don't worry. But no, it's just long story short, that's how it happened. And to be honest, we'll speak about details later, but it was the best decision I've ever made.
Okay. So to chart the journey that you went on, Ben, and Ellis, you're on now, the question to you, Tins, is, you know, you would have played against the Leicester side that won four titles in a row and back-to-back Heineken Champions Cups as they now are. You know, what do you remember of Welford Road when it was at its most ferocious and the team when it was at its almost unbeatable?
Yeah, it's funny that you talk about that. The walk to the pitch is so unique. A, because you're shitting yourself that you're going to slip if you've got metal studs going down the stairs. Literally. Every time I went, I was panicking that I'm going to just deck it in front of the whole crowd and immediately. And then just the uncomfortableness that their fans put you under as well. Yeah, they will tell you exactly what they're feeling and what they're thinking, and whether it be right or wrong. You know, if you would be moaning about it if it was on social media, but when it's face to face, you can sort of put a face to it. You can't argue about it because they're just telling you. It's not hidden behind anything, and then it is that physicality. You just, you know, for like Mudos, I know I was going to get kicked in the nuts, or he was going to mistakenly elbow me in the face and probably break my nose, or you know, it was always going to be uncomfortable, and it was always going to be hard, and that's what you went expecting. You know, sometimes you can go to a game, whether it's right or wrong, and you go, right, we should walk over these guys. It's going to be we're way better than them. Whereas every time you went to Leicester, even if you thought you were better than them and you're in better form, you knew it was you were going to have to work hard for it. And that was the hardest thing about going over there, especially when at the start when I was at Bath, and Bath and Leicester were basically the best two teams at that time, and we had some humdingers, sort of physical ones. And that sort of just grew on you, and you knew that not that it was like, oh, here we go, Leicester again. You obviously had the excitement of playing the best, but at the same time, you did have that. I know what my Sunday's going to feel like. I know what my Monday's going to feel like.
But yeah.
Then you just have to get on with it.
It was a dynasty, I think, in as much as rugby's had one of those, and I'm not sure we'll see another side do four in a row. Sarries have obviously come quite close, but. Ben, you were actually, when we had Geordie Murphy on the other day, you were very critical of, and I definitely don't want to get Ellis into trouble here, and I know it's sort of, it's a difficult topic, but the shoots are emerging again, and the club is heading very much back in the right direction. But Ben, just to pick up on, I suppose, some of the criticisms that you picked up on as to why the club lost its way, and can you just sort of elaborate on that?
Well, to be honest, I elaborate with a serious lack of information. Like you asked me a couple of weeks ago, you know, can you commentate on the Premiership? I don't follow the Premiership, but I've always followed Leicester.
What about your personal experience in your time at the club? When you look back now, why did the threads unravel from what they once were?
Well, I think clubs change all the time. But what I remember from 7 to 9 is how deeply engraved the culture, the spirit, and the love of the club was, right? And how I remember, because I wasn't, obviously not an English player, but I was playing in and out for the French team at the time. So I was part of that core group that stayed even sometimes during international windows. And we had an extraordinary team, even when the superstars were gone. We had, may you rest in peace, Cyril Rambeni, who was a monster of a player. Alisana was there. And, you know, you just, Sam Vesti, Aaron Major, whatever, Geordie was always there. And so we had that vibe and that thing where all the boys were constantly going at it. You mentioned Richard Blaze, the Deacon brothers, whatever, you name them. They were all there. And so there was a thing about when you could recruit a superstar, it was outstanding. We were delighted that the Tom Croft and all those guys went to play for England. It was the best thing ever. But we didn't necessarily feel that it was the only thing part of the club. And so as soon as I felt, I kept on looking at Leicester afterwards, I just felt like Tin said, sometimes you would see, you know, Ben Young's George Ford and all that lineup of backs. And I'm thinking, yeah, there's a shit ton of quality everywhere. But then you would rarely see them all together. And I just felt that the core boys who represent sort of the heart and the soul of your club. And I don't know them personally. That's why I'm telling you. It's just like an Ed Slater, for instance. You know, like the big reliable guy that's there in the middle of your changing room and that will hold things together. I just felt that these guys were not put in priority. Whereas the reality of a club is that you need superstars, you need this super talent, but it's your 80% of guys who are there all the time. That's your the heartbeat and the soul of your club, right? And I just felt that they went away from it.
Okay. I remember doing a show with you, Ellis, I must have been a couple of years ago, and you said it, I think you just re-signed, and you said it, I can feel it's coming back. In the years that you've been there now, is this as good as it's been?
Yeah. In 2016, it was probably the last time I felt similar to what Ben's describing there in terms of a glue in a team. And it's true in what you're saying. And we're definitely getting to where we should be. I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, it's where it needs to be. It's like it was back in the day. But I do think we lost our way in terms of how we value culture and people within the team. I don't think people had any direction in like he said about Ed Slater, Swede used to pull the team together, sort of say it how it was. He was everyone's sort of go-to man if they had an issue. And I feel like we're finally sort of getting that back together. And Sammy Harrison, the scrum half who left to go to Australia because he wanted to be in the sun, I guess. But he's a legend, obviously, always been at Leicester Tigers. And that was sort of the last one, maybe, I'd say, of the crop who left, who was probably... had that ability, you know?
Yeah.
At Leicester from day dot, been there for all the good, all the bads, won trophies with them, knew what it was all about, and left. Whereas, like, the rest of the boys, besides Tommy Youngs now and Coley, obviously, in recent years, the rest of them always used to go away to England. Like he said, Tom Croft, all those boys. And then, like, Matt Smith retired. So we lost probably 1,000-odd caps for the club within 2 years, you know. So it's a lot of experience for a club. So we sort of had to, or what Steve's done so well is sort of empower the younger boys who have always been at the club, academy boys, what they call a Leicester skin. To
why are they called that?
For, I could not tell you, but it's, don't call them anything else. God forbid. And now those boys are now getting up in meetings and they've got sort of like roles within the team. Whereas like before, I've come from Bristol, Ben came from Paris. I don't personally feel it's right for me to be at the heart of that culture. Don't get me wrong, I'd like to say I'm a big part of it. And I'm all for it. I'll buy into anything the boys want to. But I feel as though it should always come from someone who's at the heart of that club, you know? Someone who's always been at that club. What Leicester is what they live and breathe. And I'd love to say it is for me, but it's not, is it? I'm from Bristol, obviously. I want to go home one day to Bristol and live there and see my family and stuff. So for someone who's from Leicester to be at the heart of the culture, I think it's important. And that's what Steve's sort of slowly embedding into the team. And I think everyone's realising how big an impact it has on the rest of the squad.
So what... I mean, you mentioned Steve. I mean, since he's come in... You're talking about the empowerment, etc. How much of it is down to approach on the field as well?
Yeah, obviously, I'd say most people know Steve doesn't really, he doesn't hide any, he doesn't show a lot of emotion, but he doesn't hide anything from the boys. So everyone knows what you see is what you get. He's not going to lie to you. He's very honest. I'm not saying people have done that in the past, but people definitely don't think, there's something this bloke's hiding from me. He's not being honest with me. So I feel the boys have a lot of time for him in that respect. Like, he's not the most social bloke in the world. I don't think he's ever going to be. But he's a fucking good coach. And he means what he says. And I feel the boys buy into that. And that's why he's done so well coming into this environment. Because we've really got something to sort of sink our teeth into.
Does it feel a clearer picture at the Tigers at the moment? I mean, again, this is all hearsay and it's all rumour, etc. But there's been a lot said and sort of insinuated over the last few years. There's a lot going on in boardroom and there's a lot, you know, there's obviously that huge hoo-ha around players being asked to take pay cuts, etc. It felt at times, and this is purely looking outside in, that there were a lot of smoke and mirrors, a lot of dark corners, a lot of sort of whisperings and goings on. Does it feel like you've moved through that? Does there feel more transparency?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't thought about that for a long time. And I'd say, and I know it sounds like I'm blowing smoke up his ass, but I'd say that is Borth's doing, because we shouldn't hear about all that sort of stuff. Like, we shouldn't be the ones at the face of that, dealing with everything that goes on in the background. That should be sorted. That's a business thing and that's a club thing. That should all be sorted out away from the playing thing. They shouldn't amalgamate together. And I feel that all the problems that we had sort of with Leicester Tigers as a whole when we weren't doing well, it almost sort of crept into the way we were playing, and vice versa. If we were playing shit, I felt everything was on fire on the outside. I feel Steve keeps playing and even off the field sort of stuff very separate. So, And it doesn't affect the way we train. We can train better, you know, like, I just feel everything's a lot more fluid now. There's no more bumps in the road for us. And of course, we're going to face adversity and we're going to lose form and something's going to happen at some stage. But I feel very well equipped as a team to deal with that when it does happen.
When you look back at that period, and I just suddenly was smiling because I was remembering you tweeting a croissant and then some sushi and then I can't remember the other bits and bobs, but it was just a very subtle way of saying, you know, if you want to play the game, let's play the game. But when you look back on that now, I mean, obviously that's hugely sort of a pressurized environment for a player, but how do you reflect on Leicester at that point? This was the contract negotiations. Yeah. Am I right in saying, just for those who don't know, there was a 30% pay cut dictated to the squad, and some said, yeah, great, let's crack on, and others said, no thanks.
Yeah, I feel the way it was probably handled wasn't great, and I don't want to delve into it too much because, like I said, okay. I'm happiest in the past. But
yeah, sure.
I just feel the comms wasn't great, and I feel like with Steve now, if anything's going on off the pitch, we find out before everyone else, which is the way it should be, you know? Like, Tin shouldn't find out something that's going on at Leicester before I should, rightfully so. And I had people phoning me or texting me from other clubs knowing stuff before we did, like, oh, I've heard you boys are doing this. And then we were like, what the fuck? Like, why don't we know that? So if any, and obviously it's not happening anymore, but if something's happening off the pitch or if someone's leaving, someone's coming in, Steve will tell us as soon as we need to know.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like he'd hide anything out from the squad, and that's why he's got massive respect from a lot of the boys. I'm not saying Jordy would hide anything from us, but what did happen was things would get mixed up and messages would come from someone and someone else, and then I feel they always used to get crossed over, whereas now there's a very clear directive of if you want an answer, who to go to.
Yeah, and I absolutely don't want to make this
difficult for you.
The reason I ask is because it's just interesting to see how things have developed and materialised and how that therefore is leading you into the place that everyone feels Leicester should be, which I just think it's really interesting. You know, so many clubs have been on such a sort of turbulent journey. Mm. It's great to see that Leicester are sorting themselves out. Do you see that, Tins, when you look at them play now? I mean, are you seeing a Leicester side that's getting its bite back?
Yeah, definitely. I think that what Ellis has described there is what we have always been hearing. You are hearing things, and they might not be actually factually correct a lot of the time, the things you're hearing, but they're coming from multiple sources in multiple ways, and that always affects the boys, because you're then at the bottom, and you are, even though you know you're a player and that's your role, when people are firing stuff from left, right, you go, well, how have you even heard that? Oh, it came from this guy or this guy. And you're in your own club and you don't. That takes security away from you. Security about how you want to play. It can, you know, it affects how much you want to play for the club. You're like, well, if they're doing all this, or you lose a player that no one wanted to lose, you know, you heard no one wanted Ed Slater to go, but then suddenly he's just gone. He's at Gloucester in part of a deal to get as a back end bit to sweeten the Johnny May deal. And then if he is that such powerful guy in the heart and soul, then that's a misread within the club that you could let a guy like that go in that scenario. And I think you saw it with the way that Jordy went, and Austin tweeted something about how this shouldn't happen this way. And whereas now there aren't any rumblings sort of coming out. You're actually talking about performances, wins, way they're getting back to playing, individual performances, like how Genji's been playing. And that's then makes it very much easier for a player to just rock up and play the game, turn up, train, do my job, get on the field, show my passion, show my what I'm about in a physical sense and what I'm paid to do. And it just feels that, as Ellis has described, that the nuts and bolts have tightened up. So there's no leaking water. It's all coming through what they deliver on the field.
Yeah. Ben, when you listen to all of this, and I know you sort of, I know you don't watch the Prem, but I'm sure you keep in touch with people at Leicester. I mean, can you put your finger on why they've gone from back-to-back European titles, four consecutive titles, you know, I can't remember how many consecutive finals they were in, but it was something ridiculous, like 11.
13.
Was it 13? Yeah, well, good on you. There's a historian. But can you put your finger on why that unravelled so spectacularly?
Mate, so I did four finals in two seasons with Leicester. But I also realised that after that rugby in 2008, 2009, whether it's in France or in England, I think genuinely the mid-level has risen everywhere. I think the economy is just in a different scale everywhere. Basically, the competition is just stepping up everywhere. So that competitive advantage, or whatever you want to call it, that they had before, and the margin between the good sides and just the top sides is actually very small now. But and it's a tough one to handle. So all I felt is that when I was at Leicester, there was Louis Deeks and Ben Kay, and they were already promoting Richard Blaise. you know, to be the next one.
Yeah.
When there was Julian White and Martin Castrodovani, there was a long-haired Dan Cole who was there, who was 20, and I knew he was going to be the hot thing.
There I was can remember Harry Elliott doing a rugby club, and Dan Cole scored a try from 50 metres. I think he was
mate, he was
for,
rapid. He was really Bedford. Dynamic.
Bedford, yeah.
Yeah. Little T-Rex legs. Just I've never seen a man run so quickly with such a small gait.
Mate, there was Harry Ellis, Julian Dupree, and the young little Ben Youngs, who was coming out of nowhere, who was absolutely rapid, but didn't know how to play nine at the time. He just outran everybody. That's just what he did. And so basically the depth of talent was mind-blowing. And after, I didn't see it coming, obviously, because it would have been too easy to call. But I just felt that when those big names were leaving, I did not see the sort of core academy boys, you know, keeping that glue together and being the next 10 years, building the next 10 years. I felt it was a fast fix, in and out, changes coaches, go back to the good old days. I had Matty O'Connor. He was the back coach when I was there. And then they bring him back. You know, I just felt there was never like a proper new dimension. They were chasing instead of being the ones who would go ahead. I mean, when I was there, there was a guy called Craig White, who was like a super influential conditioner at the time. And he was miles ahead of everyone. I don't know if it's the same nutritionist, but they call him Phil the Power. I can't even know his name. But there was a guy, because he looked like him, I think, or something. And he would come and, you know, and he did all the nutrition was not a step ahead or whatever. So we did the cryo chambers in Poland in 2007. Nobody did that at the time. I'm telling you, I felt that I was drafted in the NBA. And then the more and more it was coming, the more I was speaking to the boys. Yeah, no, we're still doing the same things. We're still in our old ways. And they were just not, you know, not going out with different things. Saracens, you like him or you don't, but they went on the piss 3 days. You know, they did that thing of the team bonding, socializing, whatever, that we copied with Clermont. For sure we copied, but they were ahead. Leicester used to be ahead, and now everybody else is ahead, and they were trying to catch up. So that's the only thing that I sensed coming. But obviously I couldn't put a finger on it at the time.
Okay.
It's a difficult one. Yeah, the only sort of thing I could think about was sort of Gloucester, where we finished top for those three seasons, and lost every single final we ever went in, apart from the European Shield, which we won against Irish at the Stoop. But
it was James Forrester's day, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sometimes it just sneaks up on you. I think that Leicester team had such a sort of influential experience core that when they start leaving or retiring, it is hard to replace them, because even though you're blooding the young ones, but are they actually getting game time blooding? And then have you actually found out that much about them, because they don't actually generally have that much game time? Yeah, they can step in for the odd game, but can they consistently do it? And I always feel it's a flow you sometimes can't control. You've taken the decisions, and then it either works or it doesn't, and then they're then to try and pull it back, rebuild it, bring in the right people who are going to get you back up there is really hard. So, you know, with Dean decided to change it in 2009, and we completely got it wrong, and we were battling, and then we never really managed to get back up to where we were playing in that 2006, 2007, 2008, the level that we were playing at. And then we started going through coaches. Dean left, then Brush left, and then suddenly you're in this professional cycle of no one gives a coach long enough to actually, you know, I think if you bring in a coach, it'll take three seasons before you see their influences in recruitment take shape on the field. So, but you know, we weren't getting that, because you can't just go out and buy everyone and bring them in and expect it to change like that. You know, you look at what Exeter did. It's taken 10 years of bringing in one person here who's going to do this, and this is what his culture is, and put actually more recruiting around the culture and the belief of the player rather than his ability, because you know you can maximise it if his head and his heart are in the right place. And it's not easy. People just think it's you're bringing in a superstar. It doesn't work like that. He has to have some interest in what Leicester are about, or he has to have some interest in what Gloucester, the history of Gloucester. You know, from a Gloucester point of view, it was understand who Mike Teague was, understand, you know, that older, gnarly side of it, and then understand the journey of where it's gone through. And I think that's the difficult bit, and that's what they sort of got wrong.
I'm not quite sure if this is the right question, but I'm going to fire it in two parts. What percentage of a successful team, Ben, comes down to the boardroom. And can you win trophies without a successful boardroom?
I'd say so, yeah.
So you can, have a team that defies
the
suits.
But again, maybe not in new rugby, but I was raised in Stade Français that won it without coaches twice.
Right.
They fired their coaches in January and they still won it. And that was rock and roll.
Actually, Quinns are trucking along quite well at the moment without a head coach as well. I mean,
but it's different rugby. Different rugby. What I mean is that for me, whether it's different eras or different times or professional, non-professional, the club is the players. The field is the players. The soul and the heart is the players. But a boardroom can seriously turn things into shits, that's for sure. They can destroy all the hard work and the commitment and there's resilience of the playing group, for sure. But a strong enough playing group can overcome absolutely anything. The whole Toulon era, everybody was raving about Boudjelal, what he did, and Bernard Laporte and stuff. I will tell you definitely, the Toulon who won 3 Champions Cup is Johnny Wilkinson, Matt Guito, Juan Fernandez Lobe. They did everything for that team. They decided of everything. And you just sparkled a few. Bayan Abanama, Nunu, Bakis Bota, and all the rest, on top, in case you need them.
35 so internationals all right. Does help in your squad. Yeah,
it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. But it had nothing really to do with, the board and the president. So they let him do all the yapping. But when you have 10,000 international caps on the field, it's easy to have that experience to be able to press pause to... When Johnny Wilkinson took the young boys, relaxed, they relaxed. There was not even a doubt in it.
I don't think Johnny Wilkinson's never told anyone to relax. I'm sure of that. I think it'd be a ghetto, probably a bit more.
Yeah.
But you could say that example is an anomaly because...
Absolutely.
The board didn't run things very well, but they still opened a checkbook and built a squad with 35 superstars in it.
So now you're asking the question, do you need a massive checkbook to win games?
Well, it's more can the board... So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to sort of frame this around Leicester, but the accusations are that Leicester, 5 years ago, fell off where they wanted to be because they weren't making the right decisions in the executive suite. And I just wondered whether, if you haven't got a checkbook that buys whatever player you want whenever you want it, the impact of the board, therefore, means that... You end up losing your way.
I think with that though, there's a whole cycle within that. It's that, not to say there's an arrogance of a board, but let's say if you have the history that Leicester has had, the board could quite easily say, "Well, we're not paying him that because we're Leicester. He should want to come and play for us because we're Leicester." And that's
what have you
heard? Yeah, that is what has happened at boards. I think they want to use you as a player as a commodity when they want, but then they expect you to change when they think you should want to play for their club. Whereas it's not. It then comes down to you going, well, if someone's offering money me over there for my move from Gloucester to Bath to Gloucester, obviously Sale had quite a big checkbook at that time. Sarri's had a huge checkbook at that time. And then my decision was made about rugby. But I had a figure in my mind. If I hit that figure, then I would go to the best rugby playing where I saw the best potential to win something. Wherever that be, the next best thing would be the paying thing. Well, yeah, but they were
at that time. Actually.
At that time, at that time it was like a shell of what you're talking about. Sarri's was known to be the Toulon of the British Premier. They paid massive wages for your Castagnettes. Obviously, they did have that period with Frankie Pienaar and all those guys where they had an unbelievable team, but they never won anything. So it can do that. And I think Toulon took it to an extreme if you look at the actual quality of the players that they bought. They were off the chain. Everyone was like world class. So I think there's a balancing act. But yes, can you do them both without? No, everything goes hand in hand, I think.
You asked Ellis earlier if he was feeling happy and stuff, because at the moment he's tearing it up. So I don't know you personally, Ellis, but I saw you play in Six Nations, then I saw you play the last 4 games, and I understand that you said that the bubble was quite heavy personally because obviously you prefer to be with your mates and your family. That's the explanations. Players are just human beings. You need to be happy. You need to have a fulfilled life. You need to feel that, you're just a normal bloke enjoying life day after day. And that's why he was happy. So my answer to you, Alex, is just saying, if the board are strong enough, because maybe you're too young or, you know, a lack of experience within the side to influence it, you know, try to pull you away from saying, oh, play on those emotions, but you should stay for the jersey, you should stay for the stadium, you know, you should stay for all those things, and then not get the results, obviously it takes a toll. So you can win without a board, but you need a hell of a lot of experience. So maybe the 2006, 2007 Leicester Tigers could have, because there was 1,000 caps on the field. But after that, it's a bit much to ask for younger generation to take the power, and on top of that, to be, you know, disconnected from the board. And then what you see is that you see guys who are just unhappy. And the example of Ellis in the last couple of weeks is that happiness makes you perform. That's it.
I want to talk final in just a moment. Just one last question to you, Ez. Do you have any dealings with the board? Do you want any dealings with the board? Or is it the whole sort of, if you're not hearing anything, you're doing pretty A-OK, keep going?
In the past, I've had a lot of dealings with them, more so just over contracts and stuff. If, like, I wasn't getting... If I had asked a question, someone would say to me, I've got to ask the board, I'd just be like, fuck it, I'll go ask the board myself. So only really with contract negotiations, then obviously with all the pay cuts and stuff, we spoke to them a bit more in depth. I think every club did, but no, I'd like to say that the best thing to do is sort of keep your head below the water. You don't really want to piss anyone off too much, especially at that level, because the suits are the ones who put all the strings at the end of the day.
All right. Perhaps want to pick up another time. I just think it's interesting to sort of chart the high, the low, and on their way back up again of the Tigers. And I think there's some really fascinating stories about how rugby clubs work that I'd love to explore in more detail, but not today. Tell us about this Friday, and tell us about the levels of desire. Tell us about how you're going to go out and win it, Ellis.
It's the first final we've been in. We were in the semis last year, weren't we? So we played in the semi-final last year. Obviously, with the seasons happening so fast, it feels like a few months ago that was. Yeah. Well, it was a few months ago. So it's obviously come around quite quick. And like you said, we've obviously found a little bit more form, more consistent performances together recently. So for Friday, I'd say there's obviously a bit of, I don't know, it's not nerves, but boys, it's the unknown, really, isn't it? Like, no one knows what's going to happen. Obviously, with a French team coming over, Montpellier, I'd say, are a bit different to your typical French team. They've got a lot of South Africans in there, and you can sort of predict what they're going to do a bit more than your Toulouse or your Toulons and those boys. They're actually a bit more rumble in them, you know, with the forwards. So, and obviously that's what we're basing ourselves on at the moment. So it's going to be a big confrontation there. They're probably going to hear this and then say, fucking hell, Ellis wants a big confrontation. So, brilliant.
Bring it on.
Yeah. So
I'll tell you right now, Mohamed Anwas doesn't have a clue what you just said, mate. You can
even better. Right. I can slag him off all I want. So yeah, even like Ben said then, I'm looking forward to playing against him. I won't even attempt to announce his name, but yeah, like, they've got a lot of quality in their pack, and Montpellier have been going really well in their league at the moment, and you've seen what they've done in Europe, so I'm excited myself, and more so as well just because obviously they've got that, a lot of those players over there, like, for example, Reinach used to be in the Prem, and I can imagine a lot of their players are sort of picking us apart and saying, when we used to play against Leicester, because two seasons ago we were quite a poor side when Reinach was over here, so I'd assume he's probably saying how they're going to beat us, and I'd like to say the boys are going to chuck everything into it and hopefully we get the right result. But I know the boys are very excited, but there's a bit of nerves as well, which is a good thing.
I love hearing that kind of thing, because I imagine there are a lot of games now where, you know, sometimes it's you desperately want a bit of that. The question I was going to ask you is, do you feel and do you talk about needing this as a collective? Does it, you know, is it something that you guys need to get over the line in because you're on this journey?
The final?
Yeah.
In terms of winning?
Yeah.
No, like Steve says to us, he says, boys, if you go out there and you give it your all and you try as hard as you can, 100% effort, and we get beat by the better team, then he hasn't got a problem with that. And I think that's probably the best way to look at it.
Okay.
I know it sort of sounds like when you push your kid into a competition, they finish last and you're like, well, at least you tried. That's the main thing. Because it's not, that's not the case, you know. You don't get if you're not first, you're last almost, especially in finals, of course. So I wouldn't say there's a pressure on us in that respect that we have to win it. No, we don't have to, but fucking hell, we really want to. We're going to give it a good go. And we'll see what happens on the day, but I'm excited myself.
Can I ask you, just you were talking about Craig White earlier, Ben. Can I just ask you, Ellis, about Aled Walters and the impact he's had? Because obviously, you know, I remember seeing him on the touchline at Thomond Park when he was at Munster a few years ago, and then he's gone off and won a World Cup with the box. And now he's in with you. I just wonder, we were talking to Bobby Strigen the other day and the impact that he has wherever he goes. And Aled is someone with a massive sort of growing reputation in the sport. I just wondered what kind of buy-in he gets, what impact he's had, how much you've enjoyed working with him.
Yeah, I think these sort of head of performance roles now are becoming a lot more crucial in the club. And like Ben said, he had the... What's his name? Craig White. Yeah. I've never met him or worked with him, but I'm sure he's sort of played the same sort of role Aled does now. Him and Steve are complete polar opposites in people.
But does that work well?
It works so well, the yin and the yang. And Aled knows when we need to sort of lighten the mood a little bit, and Steve knows when we need to sort of crack the whip a little bit. But they both do it in the right capacity. So like Aled would lighten the mood, Steve bring it down a bit, or vice versa. Even Steve would bring it up a bit, or Aled would go hard at us, you know? Because he's very funny, he's a bouncing around character and stuff. If we're not working hard, he lets us know. Like, he proper comes down hard. So I think that's the balance that he brings, and it's invaluable to the team. And like you said, the Bobby Strigen podcast the other day, I've heard great things about him, the rope, the legendary rope. And then JC with England now, it's probably something that... That was probably my first taste of it, was with JC, right. Who's a similar form to both of them, really knows his shit, but can have a bit of fun as well, and sort of goes from the S&C perspective into the sports science and that, but then brings that together with the rugby side of things. He's got a decent knowledge of rugby. And Navin Aled and the team's been amazing. Yeah, he's a proper character. He'd do well on this podcast, to be honest, if you ever wanted to get him on. He's a very, very interesting character.
Fascinating. And with the World Cup, I remember having a beer with him after the World Cup final celebration dinner, him and Felix Jones, who I think were just sort of drinking in every moment that they could possibly do with them. Springbok Blazer. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Springbok Blazer and well deserved beer. Quick word on Montpellier, Ben. I mean, we've touched on it, obviously, with Ellis, but this is no gimme as far as the Tigers are concerned. But if they're going to be beaten, where are Montpellier going to get done?
Well, Montpellier are back thanks to Spirit, but you touched on how the board can impact. There, it's not the board, it's just the one president who's a multi-billionaire, who's done really well in business and scaffolding and all that. And he's just, you know, you have three or four different managers in the last 8 years who left skeletons everywhere. And then so the new coach rocks up, but there's like two assistant coaches that he didn't pick. There's 12 players that he didn't pick. And then, you know, like Tin said, it takes 3 years to do it, but he never got given the time to do so, whatever. So now they actually all end up by blowing completely up to the point where they were almost in relegation zone in the first beginning of the season. They've won sort of eight in a row now, but they were almost getting relegated in December. So it was proper red alert. And now Philippe Saint-André, who doesn't want to coach, is back coaching, who tried to sign.
How does that come about? How does a man who doesn't want to coach end up
coaching? Was because he was at the club already. He was the equivalent of director of rugby, which is more director of development. Yeah. There's a big sort of real estate development around it. That's what he wants to do. He adores rugby, but he's done enough in the day-to-day sort of stressful head coach role that he didn't want to do anymore. But and then so they had a proper clash with all the old South Africans that were still there that didn't really buy into the new culture they were trying to implement and this and that. In the end, there was a proper earthquake. They got rid of a few players. They got rid of the coaches. And they got that with a smaller, tighter unit. And since then, they've been doing really well. To be honest, they don't do anything extraordinary in the sense that they're no Leinster that will come up, you know, with the genius play. But they go hard. They work for each other finally. They do a hell of a lot of line-out mauling. Ellis, you better get ready, mate. And they just love it. So it's for them. They're a little bit in a similar situation but they probably will admit that they need it. That it's a must win. Yeah. So they were not going to come and play, but play over expansive rugby. But they're definitely going to fight hard for what they've got because it's literally a season savior for them. Because such high expectations, you sign André Pollard. You talk about, you know, the conditioner of the Springboks. When you sign the number 10 and he does his ACL after the first game, You know, they're like, oh, like, you know, they had the world on their shoulders, and the weight of the world. And now he's back. So all the boys are playing better, are playing with more pace, a hell of a lot of driving more. Paul Willemse and all those fellas absolutely love it. So not the most expensive rugby, but they go hard.
Tins, as ex-Bath and ex-Gloucester, can you bring yourself to root for Leicester this weekend?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, I can. I still would. Good. I'd prefer the trophy to be living in England. I would normally root for the team that I prefer to watch. But obviously, I haven't watched much of Montpellier, so I will root for Leicester and hopefully they will win. And then we'll have. Ellis can come on next week on the trophy. It's perfect. Why would we want that? We're a family. He's playing with his family.
We are a family. We can cheer for Ellis. I just wondered whether you could cheer for Leicester as well. Quick word, and it's because I saw you put something out the other day about trying to describe Welford Road when it's got a full house, but just fans back in stadiums. Who'd have thunked it? I mean, just quite excited about somebody. And tell you what, you get a try. At least you get a cheer off the back of it this time. So there's an incentive. But
it's a big
How much are you looking forward to just... It's just people back playing in front of people again.
Yeah. Twickenham's 80,000, is it?
Yeah. So we're
we've got
there.
10. Yeah. Obviously, it's not going to be full to the rafters, but I think any form of crowd being there. How many did we have in the, you know, when we had those, like, that little sort of interval when people were allowed to come in? Was it 3,000 or 4,000?
Yeah, it wasn't many.
And that didn't feel like a lot, but you could still hear them, but it really didn't feel like a lot in the stadium. I say 10,000 is probably enough to feel a bit of emotion from them, as opposed to just a few voices. You could hear everything everyone was saying when there was 2,000 people there. So yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I can't wait until we get packed at Welford Road again as well. But I'm proper excited to see all the fans there this weekend.
Careful coming down the stairs. The other thing I very quickly wanted to ask you is just Lions, and I know the obvious answer and I know the obvious question, but how much of what you're doing now is just to be ready in case?
None. Being honest with you, not for 1 second, and people have their own views on it and probably say I'm bullshitting you, but not for 1 second am I doing anything for the club in preparation if someone gets a niggle in any way, shape or form. It's, I just want to win with Leicester. I just want to do well with the team. And as Ben alluded to earlier, I'm happy at the moment, and that's me when I'm happy. I play the way I'm playing. So obviously I was gutted that I didn't get the email and that my emails were broke at the time, but I think there was obviously, and I won't really dive into it because I'm sure the boys don't want all the attention again, but I'd say there was a lot more upset people than I was, because some of the people who, I'd say majority of us would agree, should have been in that squad, didn't.
Have you messaged any of those people?
I've spoke to the majority of them in depth, but what can you say? Oh, sorry you didn't get in, mate. Yeah. Fuck it, don't change anything, does it? So I think they're big enough and grown up enough to move on and cheer for the boys that got in from our side of the pond. I want the Lions to win anyway, of course. I want the Lions to beat South Africa, but I'm just happy for our lot that actually got in, as opposed to unhappy that the boys didn't get in.
Yeah, and there is a long road to go. And the thing about Lions tours is that, you know, that there is a lot that happens, A, before the plane leaves, and B, when the feet are on the ground. So for you and for them, keep doing what you're doing, and hopefully that, you know, not others' misfortune, but hopefully there are other stories to still be told. Go forth and conquer this weekend. I never thought I'd say good luck Leicester, but I think everything we've discussed, I think it
Who
would be...
Who do you support, Pena?
I don't really.
Yes, you do. You're a Bath fan.
Many years ago.
You sound like a Bath fan.
Yeah.
A Bath fan.
Yeah, I used to go and watch Bath back in the day, but I haven't cheered them loudly for a while.
Well, that's because they keep messing up your predictor.
I know. They definitely won't go anywhere near them off the back of that. Go and rip it up this week, Ellis. It's been really fantastic watching you do what you do so well recently, because last time we spoke was post Six Nations and I don't think anyone was enjoying anything at that point. So watching you scamper about and create havoc has been a lot of fun. Bambino Rhino coming through. Good luck to you and the team. We'll be watching with great interest. Ben, enjoy. Ben and Tins, we're back on later this week, aren't we? Talking all things La Rochelle Toulouse and our Heineken Champions Cup final preview. So looking forward to that. And do get involved in our competition as well. Head to Good Bad Rugby to come and join us on the day. 10,000 fans in at Twickenham. very much looking forward to seeing some of you there. Quick couple of bits. You may have seen the video that Hask and I did down at Saracens a couple of weeks ago, as well as a few leaderboards on our socials showing the big man himself out in front, which is very painful indeed to stomach at this point. In the City Index demo trading competition, you can be sure that Tins and I are trying our best to keep him in check and claw a few positions back. What is it with him in our competitions? Well, at the
you
moment?
Know, his finger hit the wrong thing.
He's managing to trade better than you and I, which is very frustrating.
His fingers are over the shop.
It's very true, and not just because they've been stamped on half a dozen times. It's all part of something that we've got going on with Saracens this summer. In case you've missed it, we've entered into a demo trading competition with some of their players, including Jackson Ray, Lottie Clapp and Alex Lewington, together with City Index, the global provider of spread betting, CFD and Forex trading. We are having a lot of fun with it. Do come and get involved. If you'd like to, 10 Saracens men's and women's players, plus the three of us, are trading with a free City Index demo account. We've started with 10 grand in virtual funds to trade across a wide range of financial markets, with the competition running from April until June. The winning player will receive 20 grand from City Index to donate to a charity of their choice, which is an awesome prize. I think we'll put a lot of that towards Restart if any one of the three of us come through. Fingers crossed. And it hopefully leads to something that's going to be a lot of fun later this summer. Keep your eyes peeled on that in due course. We'll have another Good, Bad and Rugby with you later this week, looking ahead to the Heineken Champions Cup final, as we said. Don't forget the Good, the Scaz and the Rugby brought to you by Allianz. We had a great athlete last week with Murray McDonald. You did that, Tins, actually, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, yeah. Incredible story, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting into that. I haven't listened to that one yet. But do if you haven't. That's on YouTube and wherever it is you do your podcasts. Well done, Ben. Well done, Tins. Do leave us a review, dear reader and listener, if you would like to. All these things count, apparently. Ellis, go forth and conquer. Lovely to catch up. Keep
Good
smiling.
Mate.
Keep trucking it up. Go get it.
Merci.
Well done, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your weeks. We'll be back with you very soon. Look after yourselves and your loved ones in the meantime. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.